Welcome to Your Inner Radiance, your new go-to for self-love practices, yoga lifestyle inspiration, and Ayurvedic tips to support you to uncover your inner radiance. Hi, welcome to Your Inner Radiance. I'm Lily, and today I'm thrilled to have a special guest on the show, Cheryl McGordy. She is someone I've known for about 10 years. She's the owner of Yoga Durango, which is where I started working as a yoga teacher when I first moved to Durango. And so I've known her in that capacity as a leader, as a mentor, and as a friend. And she is somebody that I look up to as someone who really is an integrated yogini, a person who is kind and warm and reflective and really has a lot of depth. She is also an Ayurvedic practitioner, which is what brings me to have her on the podcast today. She studied at the California College of Ayurveda and became an Ayurvedic health practitioner in 2015. And she has several other certifications as well. She's done several yoga teacher trainings. She did her first training in India in 2006, and she's also a licensed teacher and has been involved in teaching outdoor education to young people. She also has a certification in conflict mediation, which seems very fitting for her because she really has enough balance and calm to step back and see the big picture and really understand things from all angles. Cheryl's business, Three Pillars Well-Being, is the context for which she offers Ayurvedic wellness consultations and workshops for people in a really relatable and accessible way. One of her specialties is guiding group seasonal cleanses, which is one of the things that we're going to talk about today. And I love her approach on why and how to cleanse. It's very relatable and accessible to us in the Western world and meets us where we are. So I think you'll really enjoy listening to Cheryl and what wisdom she shares. So please enjoy yourself while we have a conversation. Hi, Cheryl. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me, Lily.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to somebody who I admire so much and have known for so long, and is a great mentor and someone I consider really knowledgeable about so many things I care about. And so I think the first thing I'm really curious to know from you is, what does inner radiance mean to you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I appreciate your asking about the inner, inside of the body. I think we, you know, obviously have a heavy focus on the exterior, and I do believe that there is ways of being that make our inner world bright and lighter. And for me, it feels like someone who is more settled in their body. And what I mean by that is perhaps glimpsing into what we call sometimes true nature. And I know we hear that a lot, that term, like, what does it mean to be in touch with our true nature? But for me, it is asking myself, what are the things that I feel connected to? What are my, you know, sort of interests, skills, talents, tendencies, proclivities, and how do I work with the world, to let those emerge, you know, kind of like if you're thinking about the way the sun rises, it's like, how do I rise that within myself?
Mm.
And so that's how I would see it, a long journey in life of learning to recover that, you know, on the smallest level. And it doesn't have to be like extraordinary. It's just the idea of, it's kind of like watching a kid smile.
Mm.
And that recognition that you are that, you know, makes you bright and makes you remember your inner child. And so, yeah, I would see inner radiance coming from a recognition of your own soul. And again, like true nature, these words soul, you know, they can land in us very differently depending on how we relate. But yeah, our innermost being, you know, tends to drive the ship of what is that inner radiance.
Beautiful. I love that image of the sun rising from within.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, radiant. Well, I'd also love for you to share a little bit about your background. I know I've mentioned you are a yoga teacher of many years, owner of a yoga studio, and you're an Ayurvedic practitioner, amongst other things. I know, musician, yeah, mother, but I'm curious for you to share with our listeners a little bit about your background and what led you to becoming an Ayurvedic practitioner.
Great. Yeah, it's funny. We all have these chapters in life. And I think that, you know, when you're in one chapter for a long time, I think it's hard for people to see that there were others prior to that. It's kind of the way people, if I run into somebody in town that has only seen me in what I wear, you know, when I'm teaching yoga, it's like they can't cross that divide. They're like, oh wait, you wear jeans sometimes. So I'm saying that because I think, you know, prior to my relationship with yoga or Ayurveda, my first love is nature. And I'd say right up there with that is working with people. And beyond people would be, you know, kids, actually, teenagers. So prior to that, I would say all my work was around, you know, experiential education, outdoor education, guiding kids, and then going back to school and getting a teaching license and then teaching school for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe being outside combined with exploring teaching and leadership is like the bigger umbrella for me in my life, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to, you know, my yoga practice was always increasing over time through my 20s. I just fell in love with it. It's kind of a way to balance my tough job of working with at-risk youth in a middle school. And so I decided to go to India one summer when I had my summers off. And that kind of changed a lot for me.
Mm.
And I did my first 200-hour teacher training. And during that time, it was actually a 250-hour. They don't really do that much. But during that time, we had a little module on Ayurvedic medicine. And I mean, I can picture exactly where I was and what was happening and the words. Because I think that happens when something gets lit in you. And I remember thinking in that moment, I'm going to get back to this at some point. I know I'll get back to it at some point because it made me like giggly inside. Like, the, for one, the doctor was amazing, and he made it really accessible and funny and relatable. Like, in that moment, as he was describing individual constitutions and tendencies, it was just humorous. And it all made sense. And there were a lot of, like, clickings of information for me, and things were making sense. And so, you know, fast forward to having a baby, opening a yoga studio, you know, my son turning 5 at an age where I felt like I had more time in my life to open up and return back to Ayurveda. And so I decided to enroll in school at the California College of Ayurveda out of Nevada City, California. And I, you know, they had a distance program that really worked for me because I was, you know, had a young child, and it was a combination of being able to go on campus and do intense learning and then return back to home and work with a mentor teacher. And so I went through years of that, of schooling, and then pretty quickly started, you know, started a private practice of working with individuals and integrating it into the yoga studio, because Ayurveda and yoga are always, you know, they're called the sister sciences, so they're meant to be together. And then working with groups, lots of education, weaving it into retreats. You know, I do seasonal cleanses every fall and spring with a group of people. And yeah, I think that's some of my background, is in a nutshell, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great story. Yeah, I loved how you shared about the Ayurvedic doctor in India and how relatable he was and made everything fun and funny. And that's actually how I think of you. And one of your great skills, and I think the reason so many people love your classes, is that you do bring in humor and you're so relatable, and you make this stuff, yoga and Ayurveda, so accessible. Yeah, how do you do that, or what? How, yeah, yeah, speak to that a little bit, because I think that's something that is what I think of when I think of you.
Thanks for saying that, because it is something I have tried to refine over, you know, what it means to teach. And I think any time you're in a teaching position, there can be, you know, like a power dynamic of, you know, teacher student, or someone has the holds the knowledge and someone's receiving the knowledge. And to me, that model, you know, it doesn't really feel that alive in me. I kind of like to think of myself as, you know, a forever student. And that's not to diminish that all of us don't have a set, you know, we are here actually to share through the stages of our life. And as we get older, like, I'm, you know, I'm in my late 40s, I'm going to 50. I do think honoring, like, okay, there's some years behind me, and I might have something to share. My son might not think so, but other people might. But the honoring both of those aspects in self, like teacher student at the same time. And then I think some of these subjects like yoga and Ayurveda, you know, alone with combination of Sanskrit and unfamiliar terms and philosophies, I do think in the West it's not, we're not trying to dilute it. It's just it's more invitational to make things accessible. So meeting people where they are. And that's the beauty of also a private practice, because when someone comes in, they may have, you know, no knowledge of Ayurveda. They may have a lot. And learning that skill of, like, well, where is somebody at? And how am I going to adapt, you know, my suggestion practice, understanding of why they're here to see me to them. And as far as, you know, humor and those things go, I mean, it's just the panacea for things. And sometimes with yoga and Ayurveda, I think we think of these like serious subjects, doing these serious practices. And I just don't think that's the case. I think like that there's room for, yeah, I think there's room for all of it. I think there's room for us to find the lightness and humor in life, and of course acknowledge our contemplative nature and times when we are reflective, and you know, there are serious matters at hand.
Right. Great. Yeah, I love that about you. So I wanted to ask, I know your business is called Three Pillars Wellbeing, right?
Yeah.
So could you tell our listeners about the three pillars of health according to Ayurveda?
Great. So, there are three pillars of health in Ayurveda. Sometimes there, I mean, maybe more. but the main ones would be food. So looking at diet, what we're putting into the self, but not just the what, but the how, meaning like, how are we choosing our foods, prepping our foods, how do we consume them, and also the how of like the time of day, the season, acknowledging the cyclical nature, the daily rhythm, and how food can work into our daily rhythm, but also our seasonal and our life and our time of life. So there's the kind of the what of the diet and the how. And there's, you know, so much more to say about that, but I'll leave it at that. So there's food. And then the second pillar would be sleep. And again, we're looking at the quantity of sleep, like the hours, but also the quality. Like, what is our tendency? And this is a hard one. I'd say, you know, we know that we have a lot of sleep disorders, and and this is tough, you know, to relax our nervous systems enough to get on a rhythm. And in Ayurveda, we really see rhythm too, like needing to kind of go to bed at a certain time that supports a quality sleep. So it's not just hours, like, well, if I just go to bed at midnight and then I sleep at 8 hours, that's okay. But we tend to see the larger cycle of like, well, midnight might not be the proper time to sleep, because then you're in a more active phase and you've kind of missed your window. And so we're looking at, you know, sleep like approximately 10 p.m., you know, to earlier in the winter. Maybe you could stretch it a little later in the summer. And making sure you have, you know, checking out, like, is my sleep uninterrupted too? Or if it's a little bit interrupted, I have to get up and go to the bathroom, that I can easily fall back to sleep. And then looking at patterns, like, you know, there's lots of people who end up at in the hours of like 2 to 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And we start to look at like, what is that, you know? And there are people who have no problem falling asleep and have a hard time getting up and are kind of lethargic in the morning. There are people who, you know, have a really hard time falling asleep and need tools. So there's a variety of constitutions that are, you know, experience different things with sleep. And so we just know it's our best time to rejuvenate the body. And so when we can have good quality and quantity of sleep on a regular basis, that, you know, forms a strong pillar. And the last one would be use of energy. And I think this one is the most interesting to me. They all are, because when we talk about pillars, we're looking at if some building was standing on three pillars, we would want them equally fortified.
Right.
So the use of energy is looking at, okay, I am a sense body, meaning like every day I have a teacher that says every day you're under the influence, which I think is funny. It sounds like, or, you know, under the influence of alcohol, but she's talking about sensory impressions. So every day we are, there's a barrage of sensory impressions coming into us, right? Like, so what we see, what we hear, what we're tasting, smelling, you know, feeling, and they're kind of, they go in different directions. One could be harmonious, meaning, okay, I just ate this thing and this is harmonious for my body. It could go in the direction of disharmonious, like I just ate this thing and this is not harmonious for my body. It could also be kind of neutral, right? Like sound or something. And all of that affects, if you wake up in the morning and, you know, just picture a mason jar and they're like, this is how much energy I have in my day. So you're in states of either depleting or repleting or maintaining. And my suspicion, and not suspicion, I feel like I have adequate data to go on, is that, you know, we tend to feel a little more depleted than repleted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just the modern day. It's just how it is. And we do too much. We do it too fast. Everything's just rapid. And so the idea that we should look at use of energy, it really changes our wellness, and conserving a little more of that and putting it towards things that feel harmonious and life-affirming. So a good example would be, you know, say it's like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. I give this example a lot. In our town, there's a little plaza, you know, where it's heavy traffic. And you could decide at that time to go shopping, but you're making a choice to be somewhere that's very frenetic, hot right now in the summer. It's going to have a little effect on you. It's going to take a little bit. And that may be just what, you know, that's like, you're doing your best, right? What if you have a bunch of kids and you're like, that's the time you can go. Just fine, right? But that's going to, even though that may seem small, it may zap you a little bit versus, okay, it's 4 p.m. I have a small window of 20 minutes. I'm going to go, you know, sit next to the river. So I think watching our use of energy through all the things, right? The things we're engaged in, the relationships that we have, all of it changes how much we contain. And so, as I was saying before, because you have, say, you have a structure resting on these three pillars, it's important to fortify all of them. And what tends to happen is that the one, see, like sleep, you're starting to experience some cracks in that pillar. Typically more than one is off and compromised. That's what I see in my practice, which makes it more like even more important to fortify some of the others. If, for example, and like I've talked to my son about this since he was little, if you decide one day to, you know, eat pizza, you're like going out and you're like, yep, I'm gonna do this, you know, but you know it's not gonna make the belly feel the best, you know, you up all your practices. You're like, okay, I did that, and I go home and I have a little digestive tea and I go to bed early. And so you're trying to, you know, you work the balance of it, or you don't sleep much one night. And you make a point the next day to not expend too much energy if possible. Because you're like, that was a little rough. And so today I'm going to try, You know, I say all this and I do because I think people sometimes will be like, but that's just not how life works. And I'm busy and I have kids and I've got a job. And I think we just do our best. And so, you know, if you didn't sleep the night before, maybe there's a few things you say no to the next day and you try to take it easy and be softer on the self. And this is the inherent nature of Ayurveda is to understand that we are microcosm to macrocosm, constantly adjusting, constantly balancing, because the end result is like we want to feel good in life, and that it just all circles back to your question about like what's inner radiance. And we just all know what it feels like to wake up and feel great. And what happens when we feel that way? Things feel clearer. Our relationships are usually better. We have more patience. Our eyes are brighter. Things just look different. And I don't expect myself or anyone else to have that on a daily basis. But maybe it could be more of the state of the norm than living in a state of kind of frenetic, low-grade stress with compromised immunity, because we need it more than ever. It's just not an easy world out there, in so many ways. And so anything that we can do to, you know, fortify the self, is helpful.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That was a beautiful description of the three pillars, and I love how you describe that last one about energy and paying attention to your energy, because I know traditionally it's often translated, you know, brahmacharya, it's translated as control of sexual
Abstinence.
energy. Right. But it is, I love the way you describe it, because it is, especially for us, you know, modern, real people, householder people, it is so much more than that. And I love that idea of, yeah, if one gets a knock, then really how do you fortify the other two? That's something I'm gonna take home and think about that. So good. Thank you for
Yeah, thanks
that.
for mentioning that piece, you know, and it's not like we have to exclude that part either, the like sexuality. So that it's just one pie. Like when I was saying you're a sense being and things come in and can be harmonious, disharmonious, or fairly neutral, well, that can apply to your sexual relationship too. For example, you know, if you've had a day and you're tired, and there's some like you feel obligation, for example, to, for whatever reason, you know, that like, oh, we haven't been, you know, you have an intimate partner and it, you know, we're all trying to get our, you know, our intimacy and needs met. And say you're just like a little compromised and tired, that might not be the most helpful practice. Or I've worked with people too, and you know, when we get to a place in our work and relationship where it's comfortable, it may be that that person kind of needs to rein it in a little bit. And that's just something we don't talk about a lot. Like people, you know, if you Google like what's a healthy sexual relationship, and you know, everyone has something to say around that. And what if it's just individual, like everything else? Based on how you're feeling. Because wouldn't you, I mean, shouldn't we want to engage that way with our intimate partners when we feel great? It just feels different when we're like tired. So then that's a lot longer conversation. All of that is to say that's part of it too.
Yeah, and so I know something you're really passionate about is seasonal cleanses, and you lead group cleanses often. And I'm thinking, I know from my experience that seasonal cleansing is actually going to fortify all three pillars, right? And I know I'm, you know, I cleanse sometimes, like I do try to do a cleanse in spring and fall, but I'm also sort of lazy about it, and I'm not super committed. And I know that you are really passionate about it and are teaching people and leading group cleanses. So I would love to hear from you. First of all, like, why is it important to cleanse?
Yeah. So I kind of think of it this way. I could give different examples or imagery of something, but well, I know that I rely on my wood stove for heat in my house. It's my primary heat source. And every so often I need to like sweep the chimney, open the open the stove, clean out the ashes. Sometimes over the course of my season, like the ashes all condense and it's almost like hard, and I have to scrape kind of the inside of the wood stove a little bit and then have it nice and clean for like in the fall season again. And if I never did that, there would be a couple things that would happen, right? In my wood stove, one would be like it wouldn't breathe as well because all the ash would be caked to the inside. It wouldn't have as much room. My fire wouldn't start as well. It could even be like I could even have dangerous problems, like bigger, I could see it like disease, big problems like maybe a chimney fire, right? So I see it the same way in our bodies. Like we need breaks. We need cleaning. We need to scrape. We need to make room. We sometimes, with health practices, we can just pile stuff on and without cleaning. And that can make its own, like, say, for example, you don't feel good and you just keep taking a variety of supplements, but you're not really addressing the underlying cause. It's less effective. So we do this in our house too. It's like, if you're going to clean something before you do something to it, right? Like, it's important to clean and scrape even like before you put on a new like, coat of paint. I mean, you could put it on top of the dirty thing, but it's not that nice, right? And so cleansing's the same way. It's the idea of getting back to a baseline, but it's also the concept of encouraging toxins back to the home site to be eliminated through the body, meaning like all the toxins in our bodies come to the home site in Ayurveda, which we call, our digestive system, and then eliminate it out. And you have to change and clean the diet to do that. And so seasonally, we're more susceptible to illness and imbalance. That's why we do cleanses in spring and fall to prepare for the next season. So early spring, early fall or mid-fall, we are acknowledging that sometimes these are harder transitional seasons on the body, depending on where you live geographically. Obviously, it's different. But we tend to, as we're shifting seasons, we are shifting. That goes back to like the microcosm to macrocosm, we're shifting. And we as humans often don't shift. We have come away from nature a little bit. And so as we look out and everything's changing and shifting, we're like, oh, we can do the same thing. I can still eat whatever I'm eating. I'm gonna stay up till whenever, turn my lights on. Like we just have a way of removing ourselves from nature. So a seasonal cleanse is like, okay, let's shift it up. Let's get in harmony with what's happening out there in our bodies. And so they're not easy. It's not like a walk in the park or laying on the couch. These cleanses are confronting. We use our lifestyle and diet in a lot of ways, and we use food to cope. We use, you know, habits to cope with life. And so sometimes it can be just really hard to let go of some things and change up some habits. It's not easy. And yeah, like an Ayurvedic cleanse can be very sweet and gentle because we are, you know, we're still eating and we're doing all these nourishing practices. I like to have people see it a different way instead of like, all the things I'm going to take out, all the things I can't do. I think that mindset has like you're depriving yourself. And psychologically, right. I don't think that's very helpful to us. What I like to emphasize is like, what are we doing? What are we adding in? You know, like it just has a different way. Like I'm going to add in this practice that's like really nourishing, like a practice we do during cleansing called Abhyanga, which is, you know, self-oiling. It's like, I'm going to add that in, you know, I'm going to like oil my body, you know, do some self-massage. Like that's a yes, you know, instead of like what you can't do. And our hope in that, and I mean, there's so much more to say about the details of an Ayurvedic cleanse, but in general, we are trying to eliminate toxins. And let's face it, it's toxic. It's just toxic out there. I mean, it's, yeah. We just have a lot we're dealing with, and we can't get away from it. I mean, no matter how hard we try, right? It's just how it is. Indoor pollutants, you know, the exterior world, everything, and from the clothes we put on. I mean, it's just everywhere, and so pretty important to give your body a little bit of a rest. And then if we are, we call that ama, which is the, ama just means anything undigested. And sometimes we'll just say that's toxins. There's a little more to it, but we are trying to reduce the ama, which you could think of in my wood stove as a, like that caked on, you know, creosote, like, yeah, ashes. And then to stimulate Agni. And we're trying to find the right, Agni is digestive fire. And we're trying to find the right fire for us. And though at the cleansing phase, your fire simmers a little bit through the practices that we do, you're prepping yourself for it to, you know, turn back on in a robust way. And a robust, I'm saying, you know, it depends on your constitution. Some people have really strong fire and could use, you know, practices that help that come to a more balanced Agni. You know, some people have natural states of a more of a simmered Agni, and we're trying to, you know, boost that for people. So it is individual. Right. But that's, those are the basic concepts. It's like you're working with reducing ama, igniting Agni. And, yeah. You know, to boot, it's like, it changes all the things. You said, you know, you mentioned it, the three pillars. It helps us slow down. So we're looking at our energy. It really connects us to our food, like from preparation to consumption. And most people report through seasonal cleansing that their sleep is incredible. They're actually pretty tired because even though we're not doing a lot of physical activity on a cleanse, it's the body is tired from cleansing. So it's quite something, right? To be like, oh my gosh, it's 8 o'clock at night during a cleanse and I am ready for bed. And so I love doing these things because it shakes us up. It gets us out of our patterns. And I encourage people to look at whatever those patterns are. Like, what if you've been binge watching Netflix for 3 months? You decide, like, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. I don't know if this is the best use of my time. It's a habit. I've gotten into it, but I love writing. I love reading. I love these things I've forgotten about. And during the cleanse, sometimes I've seen people just like pick up things, you know, adding in things, letting go of things, just changing it up.
It's like a good time to really check in, not just the what we're eating, but everything we're consuming, and see what needs to be readjusted.
Exactly. Yeah. I always ask people to like pick a space in their house too. Not to get overwhelmed by it, but like what keeps us from cleaning the refrigerator or, you know, just anything, this drawer that like, you know, I mean, we just, why not take on a couple things, not to feel overwhelmed, but like, what about the space around you too?
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you talk a little bit about the food that you eat during a cleanse and that you recommend people eat during an active cleanse? Because I think that's probably what most people are most curious about.
Yeah. So in an Ayurvedic cleanse, I mean, you can do a cleanse from, you know, 3 days to 21 days, or, you know, it's all possible. I think there are some phases of cleanse, like a prepping phase and then an active cleanse phase. I think when you're prepping to begin active cleansing, you're taking out some things. And so you're taking out culprits, and I call them culprits, but like the list of, let's, you know, caffeine, drugs, recreational drugs, alcohol, things, you know, tobacco, anything that, you know, is substance. But then looking at your foods too, like processed foods, some things that are hard on the body, soy, you know, sometimes corn, processed food, wheat, animal product, dairy, meat, and things that are just kind of strong in nature too. Maybe strong condiments, drinks, you know, things that we overdo too, like kombucha can be great, but maybe not three kombuchas a day, these kinds of things that we do. So we're like looking at, you know, taking that out and adding in all whole foods. So we're talking whole grains and vegetables and working with that kind of array of food in different combinations. And then once we kind of get into the rhythm, and I said this before, we're also looking at times of day we're eating, because it's really important to get the Agni going in a really healthy, sustained way. So looking at like very regular schedule of like breakfast, lunch, dinner, with lots of time in between to digest, which will like, you know, it starts to regulate the blood sugar. And all of this is really important. So not just like the what of the food, but like the how of the food. And then when you've gone in this kind of, I've prepped and I'm ready to do more of an active cleanse. Active cleansing is a mono diet of khichdi. And khichdi is an Ayurvedic superfood. It is, the base of it is split and hulled mung beans. And split and hulled is kind of important during a cleanse, because mung beans, if you get them whole, are green, and they, you know, that green is the outer hull. When the hull is off and you split it in half, it's much easier to cook and digest. Mm-hmm. So it's a combo of split hulled mung bean and white basmati rice. And in addition to that, that's the base. It's a complete protein. So it's very helpful when you're cleansing, because it's satiating and, you know, providing you nutrients and calories and things that you need. And in addition to that, you're adding in lots of digestive spices, ghee, and then adding in a variety of vegetables into that. It's a really, really tasty meal that is not just exclusive and for cleansing, but all the time. So sometimes people cleanse and they're new to having khichdi, and then it becomes like a little staple in their for the rest of their lives, right? And so I find myself and other people saying that, you know, anytime we feel imbalanced, so you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, I have a scratchy throat and I feel a little tired. Well, why not like recreate a little bit of an Ayurvedic cleanse that day where you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to give my body a break. I'm going to have maybe mung dal soup just all day or khichdi with lots of digestive spices. And I'm going to up all my practices. And maybe that's a way that we can learn to balance the body without it having to be so extreme either. So you do seasonal cleanses as these like capstone experiences. And then in between, you know, during the winter season or the summer season, you use those practices, you know. It's not meant to be just during the cleanse, but it's like it's a toolbox. You're like, okay, that one I like. That one, it feels really good. I'm going to use that one. I don't feel so good. So that's kind of the active cleanse is a mono diet. And why we do mono diet is just make it easy. If we're trying to, you know, get to a baseline with our digestive system, we make it easy. And it's really healthy for us too. All those digestive spices and vegetables and the complete protein and the ghee is just easy to digest. It's good for us. And psychologically, it's good for us. I think we live in a culture where we are looking always to satiate ourselves in extreme ways through all the things, like having to have variety of food, like the palate is always surprised. And I think there's something really sweet about getting back to basics where it's predictable. Like, okay, I'm going to eat the same thing today. It's hard actually. You know, you're like, I am not using food to cope because I am eating the same thing. And
I think humans have been doing this.
I know. And we've been doing this for a long time. You know, it's not that, it's pretty recent that we have become a society where we can get whatever we want when we want it for food. Right. And it has changed our palates. And I think mono diets are sweet for us. It's
a reset.
It's good. It's good for us. So that's kind of the active cleansing part. In addition to the foods during a Ayurvedic active cleanse, we do add in other Ayurvedic practices that are designed to help cleanse on a deeper level. Like I already mentioned, like self-oiling the body is a way to stimulate more of the skin and the tissue in the exterior of the body and move like lymph and work with muscle and fat. And that's helpful. And then there's a practice of nasya, which is a beautiful practice. You know, where we put medicated herbal oil in the nasal passage. And sometimes we think of that as just simply, oh, well, I'm just, you know, helping my filter system and the mucosa of my nose. But in Ayurveda, we actually believe that, you know, it's a gateway to the brain. And so nasya oils often have these nervine herbs that help clear the mind. And so because yoga and Ayurveda are, you know, we don't separate body and mind during a cleanse, we're also looking at like cleansing the mind. And so that's like a practice we'll do too. And you know, this world of Ayurveda can be as big and, you know, involved as you want it to be, and it can be as simple as we want it to be too, that serves us
Right.
in the moment.
Right. What would you say are some like common things people can expect after doing an Ayurvedic cleanse? I know it's so different from a lot of common detox approaches where they're, you know, depriving themselves and they might end up really hungry or some, you know, big transformation. But what are some of the common experiences that your clients often have during an Ayurvedic cleanse?
During the cleanse, as I said already, that it's not always the easiest. I do think it can span like the horizon. I think the spectrum is broad, from things that when toxins are moving in the body, something, you know, you're going to experience something. So there could be, you know, when people are coming off coffee and caffeine use, there can be pretty extreme feelings of fatigue and headaches. I think that subside, but it's not easy. I think people, it's very uncomfortable. I think it's almost sometimes, you know, people have a hard time functioning on, you know, for a couple of days if they have had a really strong relationship. I think there can be a lot of fatigue, tired. I think that there can be, let's say, like on the other side, there can be a lot of clarity in the mind, and there can be like this feeling of brain fog too. So it's like it kind of rides, you know, up and down during the cleanse. There's also a feeling of slowing down, like the whole body can feel kind of settled and like you're sitting back slightly, almost like witnessing the world, then like this feeling of diving right in, which can be very relaxing for people. It
Right.
just it feels like, I say it's kind of like being on drugs, but you're not, which is awesome. Just to sit back and settle down a little.
Yeah.
And then I think people s tend to sleep better. I think people struggle, like I said, psychologically with just a little bit of like, what do I cope with? You know, what are my coping mechanisms? And
Right.
if they're taken away, what do I do? I think overall, I think it's very enjoyable and confronting, and it asks people to ponder some questions as they come out of the cleanse about like, okay, like now what? You know, and is this sustainable for me? And what am I gonna take with me? And what am I noticing? What people usually take is a strong kind of immunity moving into this next season too. So we in Ayurveda kind of see this long-term cycle of tissue rebuilding, and what happens today for us 30 days out. So, when you do a cleanse, you get to enjoy the benefits of that cleanse like a month out, and like in all the tissues, right? And when I say tissues, I'm talking like all of them, like lymph and blood and your, you know, muscle and your fat and your nerves and your bone and right? And your reproductive system. It's like everything benefits, all systems benefit. And your skin is clear and your eyes are clear
A
and your
win-win.
mind is clear, right? And
Yeah.
I think until you, sometimes we don't even know we're living in a little like fog
Right.
and little low grade stress. Like I'd say most of us kind of rest there and think that's normal. I think most of us live in imbalance and think it's normal. Long-term imbalances can look like normal states until we change. Yeah.
And I know one of the immediate benefits I always notice when I do a cleanse, even if I'm a little bit lazy about it, is I always, the immediate effect is that my digestion gets so much better, where I tend to have a tendency towards going dry and, you know, slowing down with my digestion and having trouble feeling like I'm really, you know, getting things through that I consume. The Ayurvedic cleanse just gets everything back on track and moving normally and feeling like I am assimilating and eliminating what I don't need. So it's usually what inspires me to do the cleanse, is when I'm out of balance in that way. And it usually always is so effective at just getting my digestive tract back into a really good flow.
Yeah, that's well said. I think that, and that makes sense, right? And don't we go through phases of like, that's the motivation, and you're like, yes, I feel great. And then don't we just forget as humans over and over again?
Don't we? Yep.
Yeah, we're like, oh yeah. And then I think these, you know, I think that's why people sign up for seasonal cleanses with a group, is to have some accountability and a time set aside, right? Because left to ourselves, sometimes we need support, you know, we need reminders, we need accountability, we need someone to say, hey, we're doing this on this day, we're ending on this day, and here's your regimen. And we live in a world, you know, we're busy, and it's helpful to have just set aside time and commit. And then, you know, and then we remember. And the hope is that, again, it's not like done in a vacuum where it's like, okay, check, did that. But each time, you know, I've had people, I call them repeat cleansers. They've been doing it.
Serial cleansers.
Repeat cleansers. They've been doing it for years. And they, you know, they need that accountability. By now, they could totally do it on their own, right? And to some degree, they do a lot of the practices on their own throughout the year. And yet, like, still kind of just want that group experience and that, like, I am committed on this, you know, this month, this time with this group.
Right. Oh, it makes it so much easier.
We need it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which is why I'm so excited that you are a part of my upcoming retreat, the Fall Rejuvenation Women's Retreat. You guys, Cheryl is going to be there as a guest instructor and give a class on how to seasonally cleanse. And you're also going to teach yoga, and we'll be taking time out of our busy lives for a whole weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 7th through 9th. And we'll be doing a gentle and nourishing Ayurvedic cleanse, and we'll have that beautiful accountability of each other in the group and in a beautiful setting. And I'm so glad you're going to be a part of it, Cheryl, and sharing more about these, you know, the reasons for it and the techniques. So yeah, thank you for being a part of that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for creating so many wonderful experiences for people and for asking me. I'm just impressed, Lily, with the course of your life too, and like where you're going, what you're doing, this podcast, these experiences. So I feel honored that you invite me, and anytime I have an opportunity to work with new people or different people, and it kind of goes back to my umbrella of like loving nature, loving people, loving teaching. It excites me, you know, it ignites me. I love that. So I feel honored.
Brings
that
out your inner radiance.
Correct. Yeah, it's great. So I'm honored. Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast today. And could you let everybody know, like, how to find you, where to connect with you, how they can get in touch, and maybe any cool things you've got on the horizon?
Sure. Well, as you know, I own Yoga Durango, and so that's one aspect and hat that I wear. And so anytime anyone's interested in yoga classes or retreats that are led through there or the group cleanses, going to our website is the best way to get updated on events there, yogadurango.com. And then my personal Ayurvedic practice is called Three Pillars Wellbeing, and that's pretty easy to find too, threepillarswellbeing.com. And I have a little more like description of what I do and how I see people and some of these, and my two, these two businesses kind of overlap, right? So people can find out about that. And as far as upcoming things that are happening in my world, there are a few retreats that I'm leading in October. I tend to head up to the San Luis Valley to Joyful Journey Hot Springs and do a retreat up there every fall and every spring. I will be leading another group experience, group cleanse experience in October. And probably the biggest thing that I'm doing, and I don't even know if you know that I'm doing this, Lily, yet, but I am leading a Ayurvedic studies course starting in October for 4 months.
Cool.
And I will have, yeah, all that info is coming soon. I just finished and finalized my marketing materials, and I am pleased and super delighted to do this because I have, it's just been something I've wanted to do for years, and it's all timing, right? When you just know, like, yep, this is the year.
Yeah, I mean,
So that's going to be an experiential dive into the science of life, and yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
great. Well, thanks again for being here. I can't wait to see you in October, if not sooner. And by the way, if you guys are interested in being with me and Cheryl on that women's retreat, you can look at awakenedheart.org for information about the fall women's retreat. And thanks so much for sharing everything. It's always fun and really inspiring to chat with you, Cheryl. And yeah, you've been a great influence in my life and definitely a mentor to me. So yeah, thanks for all that you are in the community. You're such a great leader and model of, yeah, real person.
I'm real. Yeah,
Yeah, a
thank you.
real integrated person. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lily.